When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
It'll be a 1-1 to Judge. The pitch swung on and hit. Deep center field. Trout on the run. Aaron Judge, number 50.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 304, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. That's the number to call in. We're talking a little baseball, pennant race baseball, that I will not allow to get lost in the shuffle of the NFL season. No. Last year we didn't have this, and I'm excited for it. I am pumped. And right now both teams, it's an everyday process, and last night, unfortunately, was a down one. As both teams lose, the Yankees get completely shut down by Seth Lugo. The Mets struggle to score runs yet again against Chris Bassitt. The offense has really been, you know, grinding and floundering a little bit here. They've done it basically on starting pitching. And the bullpen's been very good, too. And the other night, for example, they get the runs they need in the eighth on, you know, wild pitches. Again, 10 out of 12, it's hard to kill him. It's just as you are trying to accomplish something, and as you're trying to catch the Braves, now they're tied with the Braves, as you're trying to beat out the Braves, as these, you know, excellent four teams, someone's going to be sitting on the outside. And for it not to be the Mets, you just, you know, you need your best players to perform, and you need this offense to come through. And last night, you know, Lindor has still been great. It's hard to get on him. He's been great. Obviously, what's it, 4 or 5 days ago, Vientos was just an absolute stud and monster. He's been cold the last three games, going hitless, but hard to get on him as well. But this offense, and namely the guy I'm going to pick on here, and it's not new. We've been picking on this guy for a while. Pete Alonso has done absolutely nothing. And again, he has an opportunity here to put that it's the benefit of what happens when you're in this playoff race. No one will care. I mean, right now, I think a lot of people are feeling a lot different about Gleyber Torres than they did 2 weeks ago. Why? Because he's been hitting. If you hit down the stretch and help your team into the postseason and then in the postseason, no one's going to care that you had a miserable April, May, June, July, August. Like, no one cares. Certainly not Yankee fans. No one cares. They'll care next year. They care while it's happening. But I'm telling you right now, there's going to be guys, if a lot of people right now, myself included, think Gleyber Torres, I don't want him anywhere near this team next year. If he goes off in the postseason as a leadoff hitter and is a driving force for them getting back to the World Series, you're going to hear a lot of different opinions on that. Why? Because this time of year matters. And right now, Pete Alonso continues to have opportunities, came up multiple times in this game with runners on, multiple times in this game to have an opportunity to either, you know, break it open, get back in it. And he's just been, it's just more of the same from him, unable to come through in the clutch. And someone's got to step up. It can't just be Lindor. And Nimmo's cooled off a little bit. They moved him down the fifth. They moved Winker up, who's been great since the trade deadline, into the two hole. They did a little bit of Alvarez is, you know, I don't know, coming around a little bit. He's struggling, though. I mean, this offense just needs to start performing, because as much as I respect the starting pitching, and it's been good, it's been great recently and good for a very long time, I'm big on your best players, and your strength has to be your strength. And the Mets' strength is scoring runs. And so they got Manaea on the mound tomorrow against Francis. 11-5, Manaea has been incredible over the last few weeks, especially. And this is a big game for the Mets, because every night you are in a pennant race. And for the Yankees, you need more out of Judge and Soto right now. I expect it. They've had great years. Certainly, I'm not getting on them. They're allowed to have a downturn, but they can't have it now. And for the Yankees specifically, there's just so much talk about everything else about the team. Everything else. About Verdugo and Dominguez and, you know, defense from Gleyber, first base, DJ LeMahieu. Wells needs to play every day. Like, just there's so much noise surrounding the team. Clay Holmes, the closer, like everything. And all of it means nothing if Judge and Soto aren't absolutely killers. They have to be. And that's not novel to the New York Yankees. That's everybody. Last year, the Rangers won the World Series because Seager went off. Garcia went off. Like, if their best players and their best hitters had a great postseason, that's why they won. And now what? Garcia's having a miserable year, and where are they? And now Seager's hurt to end the season, and where are they? Like, that's the bottom line. So as we round into form, as we get ready for this three-week push, just keeping an eye on it every night. It's going to be fun. Looking forward to it. Bobby in Oceanside. What's up, Bobby?
Hey, how's it going, Chris?
Hey, Bob. What's up?
How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Yeah, no, I'm doing great. Man, there's a lot of stuff going on, but and you've been talking about it, and the Mets pitching staff, like, I'm a big Tylor McGill, David Peterson fan.
Well, I mean,
they came up through our organization,
sure.
and what Tylor did the other day, and Peterson
incredible.
Had a great season, and I'd love to see them do well.
Yeah.
And I was telling friends the other day that Tylor McGill is going to be a Cy Young Award winner as soon as he leaves the Mets.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that, but right now, the question with Tylor McGill right now is, with Blackburn still, you know, having some back issues
right.
and hand issue, like, honestly, I don't...
It's going to be a big start.
If Tylor McGill, and I know, Kodai Senga is possibly working his way back, but I like him enough. I don't know about winning a Cy Young anytime soon, but I'll tell you this: he pitched brilliantly He pitched brilliantly the other day, and if he gets another start and he pitches the same way, I'm not messing with him.
No,
you want to keep him in the rotation for Paul Blackburn? I'm going to take a guy who's thrown two consecutive good starts. I'm going to put him back in the bullpen because Blackburn's come back.
And
why?
I love the Blackburn trade, to be honest.
That was good,
but yeah, right. I liked the trade. I thought it was a good move, the Blackburn move. But, it didn't work out. So Tylor is stepping up.
Well, I'm just saying, if Tylor McGill goes out and gets rocked next time, then okay. But I'm just saying, as long as McGill's pitching...
No, it'll be against the Phillies.
As long as he's pitching, well, I know, you play the Phillies a bunch over the next week.
Yeah, no, like almost every day.
Yeah, no, you got... after today, you got an off day on Thursday, and then you got a weekend series in Philadelphia. You come home. You come home for the Nationals and four against Philadelphia before. Now, it's a tough end of the season. There's no doubt. Here's the thing about
Besides, are not going to be easy. I guarantee that.
Well, I mean,
the Nationals are not going to be easy.
No, I mean, listen, nothing's easy in this world, but the Nationals are the only, after today, you're playing the last place Blue Jays, and then you play.
But I think the Mets get in.
Well, I hope so. I mean,
And then we'll see. You never know, but I think they'll get in.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I think they've got the pitching. They got the team for it. They've been as hot as you could be. But right now, if you want to, let me pull up the Braves schedule real quick. But if you look at the Mets schedule, let's see if I can get their schedule up here. But let's just do the Mets for a second. You got after today against the Blue Jays, which is now, this is a huge game. Like, every game is huge, but right now you can't lose 2 out of 3 to a last-place Blue Jays team. You got to get Manaea, who's been your best starting pitcher for the last month, really. He's been unbelievable. You have to get this game heading into this next stretch because after the Blue Jays, you're off on Thursday, and then the Mets go to Philadelphia for 3. Then they come home for a 7-game stretch to end the season at home against the Nationals for 3, Philadelphia for 4, and then they end the year on the road against Atlanta and the Brewers. Now, the Brewers might have everything wrapped up by the end of the year. They might be setting up their playoff rotation, so what seems like a difficult spot might not be as bad as you think. Like right now, the Brewers, let me just double check this. The Brewers are, the Brewers are going to have it all wrapped up. They're 8.5 up. So they're going to be in a position to try and make sure they have their playoff rotation all set up. So that they might rest a couple guys here the last game of the year. So although the Brewers are a very good team and having a great year and have a I think they have the best run differential in all of baseball right now. They have a minus, they're plus one, yeah, plus 135. They have the best run differential in all of baseball. Milwaukee's done a really nice job. So they're 8.5 games up of the Cubs. They'll have it locked up. So maybe that series is actually a little bit easier than you think if they take their foot off the pedal to get ready for the postseason. But nonetheless, 3 against Philadelphia, 3 against the Nationals, 4 against Philadelphia, 3 against the Braves, 3 against the Brewers. That is a tough final stretch. There's no doubt about it. That is a tough final stretch. And right now they are tied, and this offense has got to wake up a little bit. Ray in Brooklyn. What's up, Ray?
Hey, what's up, my Yankees guy? How are you?
What's
good
going on? Good morning to you. What's up?
Listen. I like you as my Yankees guy because the other guy in the station flip-flops more than these Twitter bozos. But anyway, moving on right along.
Okay.
It's got 162 one-game seasons.
Yes.
So I like the stable approach, and we share that in common. But C-Mac, before I disagree with you respectfully on Gleyber Torres and Aaron Judge,
yeah,
I just want to say I'm not all that concerned about the Yankees, you know, because a lot of people complain about, hey, they, you know, they always lose to bad teams. But in the same vein, nobody says they have the best record against, you know, plus 500
teams.
Nobody
cares. 100%. Listen, at the beginning of the this is how it goes. At the beginning of the year, I had to fight off all the people who said they only beat bad teams. You remember that was the narrative at the beginning of the year. This incredible record,
yep,
first team to 50 wins. It's been built on beating bad teams. They can't beat good teams. They lost a 3-game set to Baltimore. Like, they can't beat good teams, and it proves they won't be successful in the postseason. Now, fast forward a few months, they have this bad record against teams under 500. And yet have dominated teams above 500, the best record in baseball. But you're right, we focus on the idea they play down to their competition, they can't beat bad teams, and that proves that they can't compete for a World Series championship. So pretty much, no matter who they lose to, it proves that they're not good enough to win a World Series. It's rather easy. We eliminate teams from being World Series contenders rather simply. I wish I had such foresight as many of these fans claim to have.
Steve Mack, listen, I couldn't put it any better. And you know what? I'd much rather beat the good teams and lose to the bad teams, because you're not facing bad teams in the playoffs. So
right,
beating the good teams bodes well for the playoffs. It's just like you said,
right,
you know, lovingly using this term, the Twitter bozos are going to say what they're going to say.
Yeah.
As far, you know, and I give the Yankees any credit for beating the good teams. As far as, like, the thing with Nestor Cortez, I'm kind of Team Nestor here because, like, through his first 19 starts, the guy had a 3.51 ERA, and right now he's in the top 20 still in WHIP, which is, you know, one hell of a stat if you're top 20 in baseball across the entire league.
Nestor Cortez,
you know,
is top 20 in baseball in WHIP?
Look it up.
That does surprise me.
Right.
It can't be among all pitchers. Just starting pitchers?
Well, when you look at the ESPN stats, it just says 20th. It doesn't specify whether
right. Okay.
It's, you
I'll,
know.
I'll look that up. That does surprise me. It doesn't necessarily change my opinion of him. It's a surprising number. I'm surprised he's top 20.
But here's the thing. I think it's like 5 or 6 stars that have distorted our conception, you know, of Nestor Cortez. I think because, you know, if you're pitching to a 3.51 ERA and a top 20 WHIP through 19 starts, that's 2/3 of a season. So, and he's amazing at home. And I think I have more confidence in him than Rendon or Stroman. Rendon is getting the benefit of the doubt, according to, like, Yankee fans, as far as getting a postseason start because of all the money. And I don't believe in that. I believe in going with the guy who actually has been better all, you know, like more consistent all year. And I feel that's Nestor Cortez. Now,
here's the thing. I mean, Rodon's been really good, though. Rodon's had a much better year in my mind than Nestor Cortez has.
You think so?
Yeah, definitely. You want to talk about a couple of starts changing the narrative of a guy. Listen, I'm telling you, he scares me, no doubt. If you told me, like, Nestor Cortez is going to start a game and Carlos Rodon is going to start a playoff game, one of them is going to go 2 innings and give up 7 runs, I'm with you. I think that's Carlos Rodon. But if you told me one of them is going to go 7 innings, strike out 10, and only give up 1 run, I would also say that's going to be Carlos Rodon.
I'd rather go with the one that I feel more comfortable is not going to implode, because he has the, you know what I'm saying, like he constantly implodes. Like he can't face adversity. I feel like Nestor actually has, you know, stones, and he, you know, he showed it too by closing out the game the other day. I just feel like he's a little more unflappable. And in the playoffs, I think we really need that.
Well, listen, certainly more than Rodon, but every time it rains, there's a problem with Nestor. Like there's, I'm not saying I disagree with you necessarily, but Rodon's going to get a playoff start. One, the money he makes, and two, he's the more dominant starting pitcher. I don't care what the whip says. I got to be honest with you. Like, I got to look at it. And right now it says that Nestor Cortez has the 23rd best whip in baseball,
but
it's got to be above all. It's got to be starting pitchers, because every single guy I'm looking at has innings pitched of above 150. So I mean, there's got to be some sort of innings limit on the stats we're looking at. But I get it. And there's been a handful of starts where Carlos Rodon scares me, and no doubt he scares me when things start to go wrong. The other night I was impressed with him. I thought there was the error of the first play of the game. Gleyber Torres drops the pop-up that allows the run to score, and I thought he still battled through. And, I mean, to me, over the course of the full year, Carlos Rodon has been the more dominant starter pitcher who I know is going to get a start in the postseason. I don't know about Nestor.
Right. No, okay, well, I could defer to you on that because it is debatable. As far as, like, Gleyber Torres, I'm one of those Yankees fans who is unforgiving of the first 110 games, because I feel like if he would have performed with any kind of consistency, we may not be, you know, we may be 3, 4, or 5 games up right now. I mean, I'm grateful that he's performing now, absolutely.
Right.
And we do need it now. And I'll just say this about Aaron Judge. People forget about the series that he had, you know, in 2018 against the Red Sox. I mean, Stanton didn't show up for that series. You know, Lou Voigt, Gleyber Torres, Miguel Andujar. All these guys had great seasons that year. Nobody showed up. He's the only one who hit like 500 that series.
Yeah.
And if somebody would have helped him out, you know,
well, didn't Sanchez hit a couple home runs that series? I thought I remember Gary having a decent series, but won. I think they won one game though. Like, I mean,
no, but it wasn't his fault though. He showed up.
No, I know. And look, a couple things there. One, yeah, I understand your point. I'm not telling you I want Torres back next year. I don't. I want someone else playing second base for New York Yankees next year. I just, considering the money he might get, the whole, his defense, everything, it's been enough. But that doesn't change the fact where if he continues to hit like this down the stretch, and I've been telling you this all year, I do not want it. I did not want to trade Gleyber Torres. Everybody else wanted him trade him for a bag of balls. Doesn't matter. I knew he's too important to this current team. Change it up next year. Have a different formula. Have a different second baseman going into the year. I'm all about it. This year's team needed him. And he is one of the better, when he's like this, one of the better offensive second basemen in the sport. And as long as he does it now, no one's going to care. If he has an 800 OPS in the postseason, we're not going to quibble about May. We're going to say, hey, that was a good year. I mean, Gleyber had a great playoff run. That's the Yankee gift and a curse. You might remember it, and we might remember it come building a team next year, but this season is going to feel a lot different. A lot less people are going to be killing Gleyber Torres if he goes into the postseason and plays well. That's just it. Val in the Bronx. What's up, Val?
Brother Mac, what's going on this morning, man? How you doing, Don?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right. You know, I wanted to say a couple of things about what you were talking about with that Judge stuff in the postseason, but, you know, just to get into it, you know, before I say that, you were saying something about Soto and Judge and how they, you know, I don't mind the struggles that they're having right now, because 9 times out of 10, I have confidence and faith that they come out of it. It's things they go through.
Oh, 10 times out of 10.
Right back up.
Yeah, no, 10 times out of 10.
I'm actually pleased that they're still getting challenged and people are still pitching to them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as far as that's concerned, let it keep going that way, because there was a lot of talk about people starting to, like, you know, kind of pitch around them and get around. People are still challenging them. So long as and Judges, as much as the strikeouts kind of worry me a little bit, he's still getting his singles. He's still getting his doubles and stuff like that every now and again.
He's hitting 200. So, he's hitting 200 over his last 50 at bats.
Yeah, I know, but that's the strikeouts that's doing all of that. You know what I mean?
So it's not enough singles, though. It's not enough hits. It's not like he's hitting 270 with no home runs.
But I don't worry about that with him and Soto. I'm not worried about that.
I'm not worried about it either. I'm saying the plain truth that they have to perform.
And they will. They will. That's the thing. Like I said, I'm just glad that they're still pitching to them, because they 9 times out of 10, they come out of their struggles.
Oh, so yeah. 10 times out of 10.
I'm not even worried about it. So The next thing I want to get to, though, and I'm going to say it too, and I hope this echo chamber continues and continues and continues, because it's fair. Until he does it, it's going to be a narrative. But somehow, we didn't get the postseason last season, so he didn't get a chance to do it. But the boy has been evolving, and I hope that this whole narrative with what is he going to do in the postseason, what he hasn't done it yet, continues. Because he has shown me already that every time he gets challenged over the last few seasons, every time he has like this Jordan kind of, I hate to sound like the cheerleader kind of dude, but he has this Jordan-esque quality to him where like as soon as he gets challenged somewhere or somebody tells him he can't do something, he puts it as a chip on his shoulder. I have a feeling that everybody keeps saying that, and I want it to continue because I want that echo chamber to grow. And I want it to become a chip on his shoulder because I feel like this postseason, Judge is going to blow all that stuff about the, well, yeah, he's the God, he's the King, he's the this, he's the that, but he hasn't done it in the postseason.
Right.
If once we get through to it and things, especially the way that it's happening right now, where he's not, you don't feel like he's going into the postseason like, you know, body distressed and fatigued and like really beat down or anything like that, where he's getting run into the ground. I like the way that they were able to manage him this season as far as, like, his body and the way that they've been able to play him. I have a feeling that this particular postseason, watch out. Remember before, when they were going through them struggles early on, when he started up the season, everybody was saying, and I said, watch out. Once he wakes up, it's hell to pay. He has this way that when he goes through something, and he's had the experience of being in the postseason already.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
No.
So it's not like he's going through it for the first time anymore. He's seen most of these guys already, and now it's not a new experience. This is going to be something where this particular postseason, he's going to go off.
All right. I mean, listen, Val, I hope you're right. And that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying I don't think you're wrong. I don't think Judge can't have a good postseason. What I'm saying is right now he's struggling. I'd rather have him, and you said going into the postseason, I want to see if I can get him going over the. I really don't want him to continue to play like this, the way he's playing right now, into the postseason. But look, yeah, you mentioned the 9 times out of 10 they come out of it. 10 times out of 10 they come out of it. Like, he's going to come out of it. It's just a matter of, like, he's got to hit in the postseason. That's all I'm saying. Like, we watched last night Seth Lugo shut down the Yankees, and people get hung up on it, and immediately, you know, everyone on Twitter is like, this is what happens. You face good pitching in the postseason, do you? This year, do you really? Who? Who's Cleveland starting pitching? Who's Baltimore starting pitching? You got Seth Lugo. And the last caller, I forgot to mention, he was talking about how, oh, a matchup against the Royals and the Royals. They've played 6 times. The Yankees won 4 and dominated almost every other game, beat the crap out of the Yankees and the Royals. And the only last night was the first time they really won the game clean. The only other win was a blown save from Clay Holmes. The Yankees have dominated the Kansas City Royals, dominated them. The Yankees have the best record in baseball against winning teams. He pitched great last night and shut them down. He's a great pitcher. He's had a great year. But again, I'm just saying there's so much noise surrounding the Yankees, and ultimately it's going to come down to Soto and Judge. I mean, they're going to be a huge part. They are the team. They have to be the driving force. And over the last 50 at-bats, they've struggled. They need to be. I'm not even saying they won't be or they can't be, or here comes another failed Yankee season because Judge and Soto are struggling and they're not going to hit and here we go. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying I'm tired of talking about the team around them. And I'm tired of hearing the same conversation about only 2 good hitters. Well, you better have those 2 good hitters being the. That's all I'm saying. Like, they have to be them, or the Yankees aren't going to win. 888-808-1019, 3:28 in the morning. I got you all the way to 5 o'clock. Continue to take your baseball phone calls. Mets and Braves tied for the 3rd wild card. Yankees and Orioles, a half a game separates them for the American League East. And yes, there's football, and we'll get into it. We'll talk about the Giants. And again, I want to talk a little bit more about the Jets and Sala specifically and what we could take from that game on the head coach and maybe the mindset heading into that game. And I know it seems to be like such this polarizing, it's kind of not a nuanced thing. It's either, hey, nothing to worry about, I saw enough from Aaron Rodgers, or, oh my God, they're not a championship contender. Like, there's a little bit of a middle ground I want to get into, and maybe the mindset that the Jets had coming into this game and what they are going to have heading into a Tennessee game. So a little bit of Jets, a little bit of Giants, obviously, and the disaster that is Daniel Jones. And when should the Giants start to tank? I can't believe we're not really having that conversation. I know Marash in the afternoon drive did, but he ain't wrong because they need a new quarterback.
Start some trouble and call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Yeah, 334. McMonagle here with you. Taking mainly your baseball phone calls as we are still in a pennant race. This is different than last year was, you know, obviously my first year in the overnights. And baseball was dead. Baseball is dead. The Yankees have already won more games than they won last year. The Mets were completely dead. It traded away everybody at the deadline. They were done at the end of July. And it was strictly focused on, obviously, what the Jets were going to do after the Aaron Rodgers injury. And it's just a good reminder as we, even though both teams lost and are now... You know, but it's every night. The Mets and Braves, every night we're watching the scoreboards. This is the best time of year, man. We got the NFL, obviously, and both of our football teams got embarrassed in some way. I don't know if the Jets got embarrassed. I mean, the defense sure did. And we talk about the coach. And, you know, I'm starting to think, and Fliegelman said it to me. I'll give him credit. I was thinking not necessarily along these lines exactly, but with the reaction to the game yesterday, it just feels like so many people are either in the camp of, like I was listening to Mad Dog, right? He's just in the camp of it was an absolute debacle, that they got embarrassed. They're not nearly as good as we thought. This is an embarrassment. How do you play like that? They laid an absolute egg. How could you have any confidence in this team moving forward? And then there's the, well, hey, you know, it's the 49ers, the defense didn't play well, but we saw Aaron Rodgers, and all that matters is the Jets have a quarterback. And it feels like it's very, we either poo-poo the game and throw it away, or it's an indictment on the entire franchise, the roster, and Joe Douglas, the head coach, and the rest of this season. And it's probably somewhere in the middle. I think it obviously was a miserable defensive performance, there's no doubt. And they were overrun. The run game was, I mean, and that's what happens. And what you're learning about, you know, what you can do with a, you don't need, and it's also, it makes me think a lot. That game makes me think a lot about the running back position. It just does. Like, it makes me think, it's just, I know how good he was. He ran the ball hard. Aikman called him Marshawn Lynch. But Jordan Mason is a, you know, an undrafted rookie who filled in for a Hall of Fame level caliber running back. And because the offensive coach is terrific, and because the offensive line, you know, save one rookie lineman, is a group that has been working together for years as the best left tackle in the sport, you combine those two things, you get a excellent offensive line that knows how to work with each other, and a coach who can scheme up a run game, you don't need Christian McCaffrey. Now, you don't need him. Now, there'll be games where you do. There'll be games where you'll need a game-making play here or there, and his ability to get into the end zone is obviously prolific. But you can have an average running back run behind that offensive line with that coach calling plays. You just can. Now, the Jets have a lot of stuff to answer defensively, for sure. And the offense at times was a little bland for me. I wish they would have thrown the ball a little bit more than trying to get the run game working. And also, the offensive line, it takes time to get the run game. You'll get better in the pass protection, as that's just more of a one-on-one matchup. You need time to gel, and you've seen that with the Niners. The Niners, you see that at the Eagles, as Saquon Barkley goes to Philadelphia. That's a good offensive line. They've, you know, had time to gel together, and same thing with the San Francisco 49ers. But that the defense has a lot to answer for, no doubt. The coach, because he is the defense, that's who he is. Aaron Rodgers and this offense are not out of his purview, per se, but we understand he's not making the game plan there. It's his defense. So as we look at this team and question the coach, there's no doubt about it, game one was a miserable failure for the head coach. The team looked unprepared, and the defense was a disaster. But as I said, me and Fliegel were talking about it. Is there as I get further away from it and I look back on the performance and I think about it, and the caller mentioned before about really not attacking the preseason at all. I mean, they had a 40-year-old quarterback who hadn't played in a year with a new offense, you know, new team, and they chose to not have him play at all. And I understand why. Aaron Rodgers said, I don't need the pro season, and clearly he didn't. I thought he looked great in the game. I thought he looked every bit of Aaron Rodgers. I mean, Hall of Fame Aaron Rodgers at the peak of his skills, maybe not, but I mean, the throws were pretty incredible. I thought he had three or four incredible Aaron Rodgers-like throws. I thought he looked fine. But, you know, maybe, and this is a fault of the coach, and I'm not saying you should throw away any game, and I'm not saying the Jets threw it away, but maybe there was some sort of thought process of, hey, we're just getting our season underway, right? We have a 40-year-old quarterback, an offensive game plan that maybe we don't want to uncover. We're going against the 49ers. We haven't played preseason because we didn't want to get hurt. It's a long year. It's an NFC game against an NFC champion. And maybe there was a little bit of a like, hey, we'll be fine even if we lose this game. And that bled into the idea of just not being ready to play the game. But if that's the case, and I'm sure I'm, you know, clutching its straws here to come up with a reason why that defense was so miserable. But that changes now in Tennessee, because this is a game that there's no excuse. I mean, we saw Will Levis play. And I know Pollard had a pretty good game after a disappointing last season in Dallas. But you cannot be overrun. And I know they've run the football with Henry for years, and they have a good run game. And they can stop the run defensively. That's a game you have to go win now. Like, it's one thing to feel like, hey, this is, in at least my mind, I know some people might feel differently, but this is still a talented roster, even without Hassan Reddick, and I certainly don't think that the Jets are going to run to go pay Hassan Reddick now. But I still think it's a pretty damn good roster, a pretty damn good team. I saw enough out of the offense where I really believe moving forward, you can have a dynamic offensive team. You can have what we thought. You know, Mike Williams was on a bit of a pitch count. And sure, I don't know how dynamic he's going to be. We'll see how he works in this offense. But I think it is more than just Garrett Wilson. I do think there are players here. And you're seeing Lazard is someone who, sure, with Zach Wilson, yeah, maybe he's a no-show. All right, I know he had a ton of drops last year and dropped the first pass attempt of Monday night's game. But he also scored two touchdowns. And he knew exactly what to do on the free play with Aaron Rodgers. Like, Lazard with Aaron Rodgers is a far different player than Lazard with Zach Wilson. And I still believe, although I think he had a miserable game necessarily, dropping passes, the fumble, but obviously Hall is a dynamic running back, and you saw what Garrett Wilson can be inside this offense. I believe, you know, when you talk about time of possession, the inability to really get a rhythm, I think this offense is going to be far better. I certainly think the defense is going to be far better. And it's one thing going into San Francisco or Santa Clara or whatever, going to play the 49ers and getting embarrassed. It's another to follow that up with a game inside your conference against a young quarterback, second-year quarterback, who threw the game away against Chicago, who, if it's third and long, I have zero faith in. Like, this is a stack-the-box game. Make sure this running game doesn't hurt you, and let Will Levis try. Like, this defense has to be better. This offense should be better. And this is a game where you go in there and you win by two touchdowns. And then suddenly, we feel a lot different about this team. Because, yeah, I think what we learned Monday night is that they're not ready at the present moment to compete with the higher echelon in the NFL. I thought they were. I'll be the first to admit it. I expected them to play really well in this game. I love the bet. I love the pick. I love them at 4.5. I thought they were going to keep this game close. I thought they had an opportunity to win the game. I thought, especially with the Super Bowl hangover and how that's worked out for teams in the past, I thought they were going to be right there with the San Francisco 49ers. They weren't. The San Francisco 49ers, as presently constituted on today and early in actually September 11th here, they are a far better football team. The Jets have all year to get on par, and it starts week two. And this easy schedule. And in 5 weeks, I really believe we're going to have a completely different conversation. We're going to be talking about how this offense is finding itself, how this defense has, you know, got a little bit more staunch on the run, because right now that's the main focus. I mean, you want to talk about Robert Saleh. Here's, all right, if game one is an F for the way the run game was handled. If Tony Pollard and this run game in Tennessee goes off on the Jets in game two, I mean, now you're talking about embarrassments. Now you're talking about real questions about not only the coach, but the roster and this defensive front. I mean, they cannot allow, all week long has to be one focus defensively, one focus. Do not let this run game beat you, plain and simple. It's one thing with Brock Purdy and all the weapons that that 49ers team have. It's another to go and go play Tennessee and let Will Levis beat you. Like, so it has to be the focus of stop the run. But I honestly believe that while it's a disappointing loss and it proves that our high expectations of the Jets right out of the gate were unwarranted, it doesn't prove that the roster stinks. It doesn't prove that this team can't go out there and dramatically improve over the next few weeks. And it doesn't prove yet that the coach is inept. Although I got to admit, if they lose this game to Tennessee, I'll start to feel that way. 888-808-1019. Nick Monagle here with you on The Fan. Eddie in Rockland. What's up, Eddie?
Hey, Big Chris. What's happening,
what's
man?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
All right. Let's cut to the chase and let's stop Daniel Jones and this one and that one. It's really ownership, right?
Okay sure. I thought it was a game scheme, but sure, ownership.
Right. Well, when you let Harbaugh walk right past you and Sean Payton right past you, and you're paying, and your coaches are the lowest paid in the NFL, you can't expect to be, you know, just like MetLife Stadium. You could throw billions of dollars at it, but it's still a piece of garbage, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's not one of the better stadiums in the NFL, no doubt. And people, not only is it, you know, an eyesore and not a great stadium, but it's also got a turf that seemingly some players don't even want to play on. So, MetLife's a problem. And you're right about the mm-hmm. I mean, listen, you're going to talk. I don't know if they were going to get Harbaugh. I mean, I don't know.
But they don't even try, man. Well, they don't even try.
Yeah.
Okay, that's my point. They want to pay $3 to $5 million for a coach, and they want Super Bowl level coaching. Well, you know. Sometimes you got to bite the bullet and get an Andy Reid and this one and that one. They had to do
Andy
it.
Andy Reid's not available. And let's be honest.
Andy Reid's not available.
Well, I'm just saying.
I want to talk about that level of coach.
Yeah, but how are they going to get it?
Two of them just went right underneath your nose, and Sean Payton and Harbaugh.
And again, what's Sean Payton doing in Denver?
He just started.
I mean, okay. Let's see what Sean Payton is going to do without Drew Brees. That's all I'm saying. Let's just see. I think Sean Payton's a great head coach, but you have to turn your franchise over just
Belichick
to bring in Sean Payton.
You want Belichick, though. Yeah. What has Belichick done since Brady's been gone? You've been banging his drum.
Yeah, he's the great. He's Payton's won one Super Bowl. He's won six. It's a slight
with
difference.
Brady.
No? Yeah, I understand
with
that,
Brady.
But he's also a defensive genius. Like it's a complete different thing. And you're going about Harbaugh. Harbaugh hasn't won anything.
Okay, how about this one? You've been doing the Daboll chant and everything like this, right? Now
I have.
Pretty much, you've been saying we don't have a quarterback in the Giants, right?
Yeah, I mean me and everybody else on the planet. But yeah, good.
Okay, and then you pick a wide receiver.
Yes.
And then you're going to do what with his time? Waste it, right?
Well, I mean, hopefully he has a quarterback next year. Neighbors' career is not this one season.
Because what you do is when you don't have a quarterback, you get one of the top receivers.
Well, what are you supposed to do?
Supposed to do exactly what I told you before the draft.
What's that?
Trade down, get your guards, get a running game mm-hmm. going. Get some kind of identity. Remember
But here's the fact of the matter. Nothing works without the quarterback. Nothing. That's why we're screaming about it.
I asked it before the season started.
I don't know.
What's
you ask a million
identity?
Questions.
They got an identity?
No, they don't have one because they don't have a quarterback.
They do everything great, I heard.
Who said
they
that? You keep
identity.
Saying that. When did I say the Giants do everything great? I've been killing them all day.
No, I said the Jets.
I kill the Giants more
I
than
said
anything.
The Jets.
Oh, what's the Jets'
I said
identity?
Yes.
The
yeah,
Jets' identity is Aaron Rodgers and a defense. That's the identity. The defense got embarrassed week one.
Yeah,
they better
both
change.
Showed up, didn't they?
Well, Aaron Rodgers did. Yeah, I thought he did. You don't think Aaron Rodgers showed up?
He paid the average. He paid Aaron Rodgers.
I thought he played pretty good. I thought he made a lot of good throws. I thought he looked like Aaron Rodgers. They didn't have a lot of time. The possession was way in the in favor of the 49ers. I thought Aaron Rodgers looked fine. And again, I've been killing the Giants. I literally talked about how the Giants, and I feel differently about them now. And what they his first draft of taking Neal and Thibodeau has been a disaster. Thibodeau hardly gets after the quarterback, and Neal can't see the field. Disaster. Paying Daniel Jones. Everybody wanted to, hey, he's forced into the situation. What are you going to do? And while I agree, they didn't have to. You know, you could have said, you know what? We don't believe in Daniel Jones. And I'm not going to give him a pass when he's the one who gave him $40 million and now is basing decisions on the fact that the quarterback has $40 million. Like, that's on Joe Shane. I'm certainly not giving Joe Shane any pass. I'm not giving Brian Daboll any pass. Everybody's saying, oh, Brian Daboll's job is safe. I've been saying, no, it's not. Offensively, he's got to show something. I haven't been acting like the Giants have done no wrong. I've been killing the Giants. The Giants' seasons have been over by Halloween year after year. I've been killing the Giants forever. I you have to take Malik Nabers there because you need some offensive weapons, and that's an offensive weapon. And these wide receivers, typically, certainly from LSU, have been as good a bet as you can make. Early in the, most of these wide receivers typically pan out, right? Quarterbacks are obviously a gamble. I mean, every position is a gamble. Edge rusher is a gamble. We've even seen offensive linemen over the last couple of years. Even just our teams alone, it's been a gamble. The wide receiver position at the top of the draft, these perceived wide receiver studs typically translate to the NFL. And his career doesn't have to last 1 year. And I'm hoping he gets a quarterback next year. And that doesn't mean he can't make plays either. Even Daniel Jones can just throw it to him covered and hopefully he can make some plays. But, like, yeah, trade down and get all these. You need great players in this league. They need a quarterback, and they tried to get up and get one. They couldn't do it. Greg in Albany, what's up, Greg?
Hey, Chris, thanks for taking my call.
You got it, buddy.
I can't sleep tonight. I turn the fan on, and I hear Daniel Jones farted.
Yes.
So I'm thinking to myself, if Daniel Jones really farted, it probably would be something like this. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not one of those guys that, like me and you, were big and hefty guys.
Yeah.
Scene in Step Brothers, yes, is hilarious, man.
Yes, it is. That scene in Step Brothers is hilarious. And that's what I'm starting to feel like with Joe Shane. That's what I'm starting to feel like that with Joe Shane, where I was very positive on Joe Shane in Hard Knocks. I thought he came off great. A lot of people feel differently. Maybe they're right and I'm wrong. It's been known to happen. I felt like he was, to steal a line from Woody Johnson, I felt like he was GMing in the direction that GMing is going. Like Adam Gase was coaching offense in the direction offense was going. Like, I thought Joe Shane's logic for the running back position and Saquon Barkley was spot on. I thought the way it seemed like he went about his business, the way they handled the draft, just everything about that Hard Knocks, I thought he handled himself very well. And I thought a lot of the decision-making was sound, and I came out of that thinking the Giants are in good hands. And it's a project, no doubt. And I don't know if I love this roster, no doubt. But now I look at this team, and I look at the way they've played over the last 2 years, and I look at that first draft, and I look at the draft of Hyatt in the third round to the point where the coach is calling him the fourth wide receiver. Where, and you know, maybe he'll be in some plays sometimes. Like, the draft has been bad. And right now, the decision on Daniel Jones, I'm sorry. Even if you believe, and on some level I do, that they had no choice, that he won them 9 games and won a road playoff game, and they didn't pick up his fifth-year option, which they couldn't have. I mean, people want to get on him now for that. How in the world could they have picked up his fifth-year option? It would have just been silly. What if he was awful? What if this was the Daniel Jones you got that year? You didn't. You got the best version of him because the coach coached it up, and they won a road playoff game, so you had to give him the contract. But that doesn't excuse him. He's still the GM who made that decision. He's the GM who paid Daniel Jones. That's on him. I don't excuse him from that decision, even if it was a tough one to walk away from. He still made it. So when you look at every decision he's made, it's hard. It's not easy to find good ones. So, I mean, I felt really great about him, and now I'm watching this team, and I'm starting to really wonder what this GM has done. As, I mean, I look at every aspect of the team. What's good right now? They tried to fix the offensive line. The offensive line didn't play that well in the first game. Again, it's the first game. New offensive line needs time to gel. I'm not going to call that a failure yet, but week one, eh. The year of Daniel Jones, take six, failure. The defensive line getting after the quarterback, failure. The defensive backfield allowing Sam Darnold to go 12 for 12 and go 99 yards down this field for a touchdown, failure. Like, what's good on this team? This is the third year. Believe me, you called the wrong guy if you want to get on someone who's being kind to the New York Giants. It ain't me.